Welcome back in the Matt Bubala Show here on 720 WGN. Golden Globes this weekend. A lot of good movies out in the theaters right now. Eric Davis is the managing editor at Movies.com and a contributing editor at Fandango. We haven't chatted with you in a while, Eric. How are you doing? Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you. I'm doing great. Golden Globes are coming up. Lots of awards coming up. Lots of movies to talk about.
This has got to be your time of year, right? I mean, there are probably still a lot of crappy movies out there, but at least there's a lot of good movies out there to see too, right?
Yeah, I mean, you say that, but I feel like every time of year is my time of year, because once the awards are done, then guess what's next? This big summer blockbuster season, and when that's over again, we're into the fall, and that's when the award season, at least for me, starts all over again. So there's always a lot of movies to sort of go see and talk about, and that makes me happy.
All right, so we'll get into the big movies that are awarded or that are nominated for things this weekend and stuff like that in a second. But nerd that I am, of course, I have to ask you about Star Wars Rogue One and get your take on it and what you think. It's done even better than Disney expected, right? They tried to at least downplay, it seemed like, in the media, the numbers for this, because they didn't think it was going to do Force Awakens numbers, which it didn't, but it still performed incredibly well so far, right?
Yeah, I mean, it goes to show that Star Wars sort of is a very, very strong brand. And I think what I really appreciated about Rogue One, and look, it's a film that definitely has some hiccups, I think, in terms of its character development. I think they could have done some stronger things there. But in terms of these new Star Wars movies, it's the one that feels the most like a Star Wars film. It really feels like it was born in that era of A New Hope, and it really kind of expanded upon my love of A New Hope and really introduced some sort of new things that kind of filled in some sentences from A New Hope for me, some thoughts there, and I really like that about it. But yeah, I think that what I like about it is that, and what's important for Disney to do is to, they want to do one a year, which is a lot for Star Wars, but I do think that if they do one every year, every December, it almost becomes like a holiday for Star Wars, and I really like that about Rogue One. As we were approaching it, it did kind of feel like a holiday. We started seeing, you know, remnants of it kind of appear in different mediums, TV shows doing Star Wars-centric episodes, and, you know, it almost feels like a holiday before the holidays, and I like that about it. And if they can keep doing that, and they can keep making movies that feel like Star Wars movies, and I'm talking about movies that feel like that original trilogy, I think that they'll be successful.
It's really interesting to think about, because they've hit the ball pretty much out of the park with the first two. There's a lot of complaints about Force Awakens and about Rogue One on different things, but it's not like the complaints about Attack of the Clones, right? I mean, it's good problems to have complaints, right? Everybody in general who's a Star Wars fan is at least happy that these movies are coming out, not regretting them like a lot of people did with the second trilogy that came out. But can they keep? I think they're setting the bar really high. I mean, when Force Awakens came out, to me, the biggest change was after the prequel trilogy was that we went back to real acting, to real characters, to real scenery instead of just everything was CGI. And Rogue One, I think, continued that, and we saw a lot of actual live action, not a bunch of stuff that you knew was just completely green screen. And I wonder, like you said, once a year, it's not the same person doing all these different movies, so they're spreading out the jobs and hopefully to really incredibly talented people, but how many years do you think it is before somebody says, yeah, once a year is too much, they're wearing it down, these aren't good, you know, it's losing its quality? Do you think they can sustain this?
I think they can sustain it, at least for the next few years. I mean, if you look at what Marvel Studios is doing, they're pumping out like three movies a year now. And they all make really great money because people love going to see them. So I think it comes down to the filmmakers and the storytelling, and what they're doing is they're really bringing in people who grew up with Star Wars. They know why people love Star Wars. They know what makes it special, and I think that that is key. You know, these films, you know, aren't going to be perfect movies. None of these movies are perfect movies. Everybody always walks out and somebody always has something to complain about.
Sure.
But I do think that they are making smart decisions. I love Rian Johnson, who's directing Episode 8. I love Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who are directing the Han Solo movie. I think Colin Trevorrow, who's directing Episode 9, is a very smart filmmaker, and I'm excited about that. And I think that they're making very strategic choices on who they bring in and the storytellers that they bring in. And as long as that remains top-notch and these are people that really understand why fans love this series, then I think we'll be okay. You know, we're living in a world where audiences are used to these kinds of things happening more often than not. You know, no longer are we going 3, 4, 5 years between sequels. Like I said, Marvel's pumping out 3 a year now. And so as long as we're in that mentality and as long as audiences are being trained to expect that kind of, that amount of sort of the same brand, then I think we'll be okay.
Did we just hear this week, I want to say, some hiccups on the Han Solo movie? Might that get pushed back?
Well, when they say pushed back or hiccups, I don't think that necessarily means that there's something wrong with the film. I think what Disney is probably going to do, and this goes back to what we were talking about the holiday, is I think that they're thinking that, you know, maybe all these films should take, you know, should be released in December instead of, you know, the old movies were released at the end of May. And I think when Disney sort of envisioned the Star Wars films, they wanted to get back to all of the movies coming out at the end of May. But now you have Episode 8 in December. You would have the Han Solo movie coming out 6 months later. That's a little too close, I think, that they would like. So I think they're getting closer to having that mentality of, like, you know what, let's just resign ourselves to coming out in December. The only problem with that is I think they were trying to shift it before James Cameron's Avatar movies began coming out in December. So that will be the only foreseeable issue for them in the future. But I don't think it means that there's a problem with the Han Solo movie. I just think that they want some sort of, you know, something that is the same. You know, people can expect, okay, every December we're getting a Star Wars movie. I think that's smart for them to do. I think that that little window in between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and then coming out before Christmas, and then having basically the rest of December and then all of January to really reap the benefits of, you know, a box office that isn't going to be as strong, I think that that's a smarter move than going at the end of May and having to deal with all of those big films now coming out in June and July and August.
Yeah. Do you see the Avatar movies as being a problem for them? It's so long ago that I know it's the biggest movie ever, but it's so long ago that that came out. And, you know, there was an interesting piece last year, I can't remember where, about how Avatar, you know, Star Wars, there's always been collectibles. It's always been part of pop culture. Nobody talks about Avatar in general like they do Star Wars or Star Trek or, you know, or Iron Man or other things like that even. Will Avatar really do well, do you think, when it comes back after being away for so long?
I mean, look, I completely agree with you. I do not think Avatar is the kind of brand that's really sort of ingrained itself in popular culture, like a Harry Potter or a Hunger Games or one of these more recent franchises. But I will tell you, never underestimate James Cameron. He is one of the great visionary directors of our time. He makes movies that make you want to go watch them inside a movie theater. He is consistently pushing technology forward, and I just, when his Avatar was coming, I was like, it looks okay. I watched it in the movie theater. I was like, wow, this is just so cool to watch. And then look what happened. It became the highest grossing movie of all time. So, you know, you never underestimate that man and what he can achieve. I agree. I'm not hankering for another Avatar movie. I don't really care for one, but when it comes down, I bet you we'll be there. I bet you we'll be lining up because it's him.
We're speaking with Eric Davis. He's the managing editor at Movies.com. He contributes at Fandango.com, too. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric Davis. That's Eric with a K, E-R-I-K, Davis. When we come back, the Golden Globes are this weekend, and as Eric said, this is the time of year when all those high-quality movies are coming out. Let's talk about what there is and what you should go see in the theaters. Next, Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Talking movies with Eric Davis. It's the Matt Bubala Show on 720 WGN. Eric, of course, managing editor at Movies.com, a contributing editor at Fandango. So, Eric, Golden Globes this weekend. What are the big movies we're talking about? All right, let's get into this. La La Land. I still haven't seen La La Land. And all I heard for months was, oh my God, La La Land's the greatest thing ever. And now La La Land got such praise that now it's getting the backlash already, and people are starting to slam La La Land. Where are you at on La La Land?
I'm at it being my favorite movie of the year, of 2016, I guess. I love it. I am a creator. I am, I guess, an artist, a writer. I think it's a love letter to creators, to dreamers, to people who've always, you know, kind of put themselves at risk for their art or their craft, their livelihoods at risk. And I think it's a love letter to old Hollywood, to musicals. I really like how it's this contemporary set film and nobody's using their cell phones or texting each other. I think that's really cool about it. And, you know, the music is great. The production design is gorgeous. The way he shoots it is fantastic. The performances, Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, I think is really great. So I just love it to pieces. I've watched it like 3 times right now, and every time I watch it, I just really love it. So, look, I mean, is it everybody's cup of tea? Probably not, but I love it. I think it's the best movie of the year. I think it's going to win Best Picture at the Golden Globes in the comedy musical category and at the Oscars when that comes around. And so, yeah, I think it's good. I think other movies sort of in the conversation, Moonlight's in the conversation, Lion's in the conversation, Manchester by the Sea as well, and Hidden Figures, which goes wide this weekend, I think is going to start emerging as a bigger player in the conversation because it is next to La La Land, I would say it's probably the best crowd pleaser of 2016.
Hidden Figures is?
Hidden Figures.
Now, that's the movie starring Kevin Costner. It's been marketed. It's been very interesting to watch the marketing for Hidden Figures because I feel like there's two different marketing plans. One is promoting how this is a story of these African-American women back in a time when African-American women were not getting a lot of opportunities in the workplace, right, who were brilliant mathematicians, I want to say, and helped NASA figure out how to put people into space. Is that right?
Yeah. No, this takes place during segregation. These three women work at NASA. And they're trying to put John Glenn into space. They're trying to beat Russia. It's right in the thick of the space race. And these women play integral roles in making that happen. But like you said, you know, this is during segregation. So they're working in an environment that does not respect them, does not believe that they should be there, does not believe that they should, at least a couple of them, should be in the positions that they are in. And so they need to kind of overcome those obstacles in order to prove themselves. And, you know, that sounds very serious, and it is very serious. This is a very disgusting time in the history of our country, but they make it very entertaining. They find a lot of humor in the situation, and the performances are just really great and really lively, especially from the three women, Octavia Spencer, Janelle Monáe, and Taraji P. Henson. All of them are great, as is Kevin Costner, who's like this head honcho at NASA, who's sort of in between. You know, he wants to just do whatever needs to get done to get a man into space. That's his job. That's his responsibility. But he's also sort of fighting back against this culture that does not believe African-Americans should be, you know, sitting beside them, helping them, assisting them, putting their names on these important documents. So just a lot of really interesting ideas, and the fact that it all really happened, I think, is fascinating. So great movie. If you're looking for, you know, because some of these awards pictures, especially Manchester by the Sea, which is a good movie, but it wipes you out emotionally.
Yeah.
You know, some of them wipe you out emotionally.
Right.
But if you want to go out, you want to have a nice dinner and a date, and you want to kind of see something that makes you feel good and then go have a few drinks, then I think Hidden Figures is the film for that.
Over La La Land?
No, I would say both. I would say both of them, though. Both of them, I think, provide a really great, entertaining time at the movies.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a little bit closer personally to La La Land just because of the field that I work in, and
mm-hmm.
And I'm in L.A. all the time. But you know, if you live in the Midwest and you don't really care about Los Angeles at all, you've never been there. You know, maybe Hidden Figures is the film that's more for you.
Yeah.
But I think if you are kind of familiar with Los Angeles and dreamers and artists and actresses and kind of Hollywood, and if you like jazz,
yeah,
jazz plays a big role in La La Land, then maybe La La Land's for you.
Well, let me ask you, though, I mentioned this about Hidden Figures. Have I read this right? I'm feeling like I've seen two different marketing for this film. One about the African-American women, what they overcome, and one more just general space movie. We got to get these guys and overcome all these obstacles, and where you see that there's black women involved in it, but they don't make those ads seem like that's a central part of this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it may be. You know, marketing teams are always playing with the way that they're marketing movies and trying to appeal to all kinds of different audiences. And so it could be. I haven't really paid that close attention to the way they've been trying to sell it. I've been just trying to sell it my own way. But I guess that there's a lot, I think there's a lot of different components to this film, and there's a lot of different reasons that people would go see it. And so I guess the marketing team is just kind of deconstructing that and figuring out all those different reasons and then creating materials that play to all of those different reasons.
Okay, so let's talk about now, you mentioned Moonlight. I haven't heard of Moonlight. Tell me Moonlight.
Moonlight's great. Moonlight's the little movie that could. Every year around award season, we always see this kind of independent film that climbs out and says, here I am, and it's made for little money. There's not people in it you don't really know, but it just strikes a chord. And this is a film that struck a chord. It's about an African-American boy. It takes place in three parts. It's a coming-of-age story about him sort of grappling with his sexuality amidst a world of, like, gangbangers and drug dealers, but it's told from his point of view, and his point of view is a point of view that we've never really seen from a film that takes place in this setting before. And like I said, it's three parts. He's a little kid, he's sort of middle school, approaching high school, and then he's, 20-something, approaching adulthood. And those are the three sections. Each section feels like its own experience, and it's a very nuanced film. It's a very beautiful film to watch. The guy that directed it, Barry Jenkins, I think, is going to go on to some great things. He may even win Best Director at the Oscars or Best Director at the Golden Globes. So I just think it's a really interesting film. I think it's a movie of the moment. We've seen a lot more diversity this year in our nominees, not just in movies, but also in television, and I think that that's something that audiences are demanding, especially since last year it was a big conversation around the Oscars. That there was a lack of diversity, and so I think that the industry has done a good job at sort of correcting that this year, and I think moving forward we're going to see a lot more of it as well.
Yeah. All right. We're running out of time, so real quick, let's talk about some of the movies that we're looking forward to over the next few months. Let's see. Split with James McAvoy. I've been seeing that trailer a lot when we've been at the show. Kind of a big comeback movie possibly for M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, I think M. Night Shyamalan is doing some really interesting stuff right now. He's getting a lot smaller. He's making some cool films. This one, James McAvoy, stars as a guy with multiple personality disorder, and he one of his personalities takes these three girls hostage and locks them in a dungeon, and sort of it's about that, about them dealing with all of these personalities and how can they get out of there, can they convince one of his personalities to help them when the other personalities doesn't. It's just a really wild film. It's wild, it's freaky, it's funny at times, it's scary at times. And I think what M. Night does with tension in this film is just fantastic. So I'm really excited about that because I've always rooted for him as a filmmaker, but I think he lost his way a little bit in terms of making movies that were bigger and bigger and bigger when really he probably should have gone smaller and smaller and smaller. And that's where he's been going, and I think that's where he belongs. So Split is a film that I would recommend in January.
50 Shades Darker will be coming out in February, the next in the 50 Shades of Grey eventual trilogy, we assume. Are we excited about this movie? It did well. It didn't do as well as the books. It got panned a bit, right?
Yeah, it got panned a bit. I mean, yeah, we are going to see a trilogy. They shot the last two of these back-to-back, so this February we'll get 50 Shades Darker. Next February we'll get 50 Shades Freed. If you read the books, if you're looking for a hot date, Valentine's weekend, you're looking for something with a bit of hot and heavy action in it, then this might be for you. This one gets a little bit darker, deals with, an ex in Christian's sort of past, and she comes back, kind of maybe starts stalking the situation. So maybe there's a bit more tension, a bit more intrigue than the first movie. So we'll see. I think they got this director, James Foley, who's maybe a better director than the last one that they had on 50 Shades of Grey, and they could maybe spin it around and put out the last two movies that are maybe a little bit better in quality than that first film. But I'm curious to see it.
Yeah. A little lighter family fare coming up is a Lego Batman movie. What do we expect out of that?
There is. Well, we had the Lego movie.
Right.
From directors Phil Lord and Chris Miller, and I think that surprised everyone. They loved the absurd humor in it, very irreverent humor.
Mm-hmm.
Batman in that film was voiced by Will Arnett. They're giving Batman his own movie, very much produced by Lord and Miller, so you're going to get their sort of sensibilities on this film. They didn't direct this one. But it's going to be that same kind of playful tone, especially within the world of superheroes and Batman is lonely, basically. He's this great superhero, but he's lonely, and he needs a friend. And I think it's about him kind of finding his family while fighting the bad guys. And so I think if you like the Lego movie, if your kids love that, especially if they like Batman, I think this is just going to be a bonkers hit.
And is it Will Arnett again as Batman or somebody else?
It is, yeah. Will Arnett has returned. There's a bunch of voices in it as well.
Excellent. It's not the same setup, though. I mean, are we going to see the family at all again, or is that tale told and now this is more just about the Legos?
Yeah, well, we are going to see a more official sequel to the Lego movie, and that may bring back that family, but this is like a spinoff, basically.
It's a standalone. It's the Han Solo story.
It is. It is the Han Solo movie of the Lego. But they're doing a couple there. They have another one called Ninjago about a bunch of ninjas that's coming out, too. That's also a standalone. So they looked at the Lego movie, and this is what a lot of brands are doing right now.
Oh,
you see it with Fantastic Beasts. You see it with Rogue One. They're taking their central brand. They're finding the most popular characters. They're pulling them out. They're giving them their own movie, and then everything kind of crosses together in its own little cinematic universe.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, lastly, Wolverine. Wolverine movie for, what's his name? Who's Wolverine? Hugh Jackman. But it's R-rated. That's an interesting twist. Why are they limiting their audience on this?
Well, if you looked at Deadpool last year, Deadpool went crazy with the R rating, and it did fantastic. And I think, they were always considering going R-rated with this last Wolverine movie, but I think Deadpool helped push it over and helped convince everyone that, you know what, this is the way to go. I've seen about 40 minutes from the film, and I think it's phenomenal. I think how they use the R-rating is really great, and I think for Wolverine fans, it's probably going to be the Wolverine movie you've been waiting for. And it's interesting. It takes place in the near future. Everybody's older. Wolverine's wounds are not healing so fast. Professor X, Charles Xavier, lives with him, but he's all messed up too and having seizures, and everybody's kind of on their last legs. And then they have to go on this journey together. It kind of feels like a gritty, Western in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And really, really, really interesting things they're doing with it. And if this is very successful, it could change the game, and it could give these studios sort of, positivity in terms of going forward in an R-rated direction with some of these movies. And I think we need them, to be honest with you. I think we need some sort of that diversity among these films, some of them PG-13, some of them R-rated. But Logan is a very interesting movie to watch, and like I said, the first 40 minutes are fantastic, so I'm game for it.
Well, look forward to that. Eric Davis, managing editor at Movies.com and contributing editor at Fandango. Follow him on Twitter at Eric Davis. That's Eric with a K, at Eric Davis. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone, man.
You got it, man. Take care.
So there you go. You've got today and Sunday to see what you can before they start handing out Golden Globes tomorrow night. Matt Bubala with you, Radio 720 WGN.